Hello and welcome to another episode of Interview with a Schizophrenic. I'm your host, Duncan Samra-Singer, and today I have the great pleasure of having George with me. George is 58 from Yorkshire. He has a diagnosis of paranoid schizophrenia. So welcome to the show, George. How are you doing today?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm doing okay.
That's good. So, you know, as usual, the first question that I'm going to ask George is, George, if you'd like to give us a background of your mental health journey when you were younger, what were your symptoms, how you got diagnosed, I think that's going to be really useful. So please go ahead.
Okay, well, I'm a late developer. In fact, I had to find my schizophrenia. It didn't come and jump up in my face. So basically, I got to a stage in life where I was 42 years old. My wife had just left me. And I decided to kill myself. And in the planning for that act, I realized that it wasn't actually myself I wanted to kill. It was the mask that I'd been wearing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So in other words, I realized that I'd been copying people all my life, mostly, and that it was this facsimile of what I thought other people wanted me to behave like that I wanted to reject, and that's what I did. I rejected it, and then I found myself kind of born again, at least, or at the early stages of being born again, because I didn't really know who I was anymore. So I decided to go on a journey to find myself, and in that journey, I started doing mindfulness and meditation and various other practices that were aimed at trying to get me to understand who I was. And after about a year of that, I started to develop voices, in that I was having an intuitive session with myself one day. And up popped this voice that said, "Hello." And I said, "Oh, are you God?" Because I thought it might be God, but it wasn't. It said, "No, I'm you. I'm your 17-year-old self." And that was the introduction to me and my voices. Now, this 17-year-old self told me that I had many other selves, and that basically, I'd been rejecting bits of myself for a long time, and all of those bits of self that I'd rejected were different characters within me. So pretty much one for every year of my existence. I had 42 voices, and this aspect of self, who called herself Tank Girl, yes, she was a female, I'm a man, but yeah, she Tank Girl said that, yeah, what we're going to do is we're going to go through a soul retrieval, and you're going to recollect all those different aspects of self, and you're going to reintegrate them into yourself. So I thought, well, that sounds good to me, because I felt empty and worthless, and I realized that one of the reasons why I felt empty and worthless was because I'd lost so much of myself as I journeyed through life. So we went on this fascinating journey together, where Tank Girl introduced me to other aspects of self, who were gatekeepers for other aspects of self. And one by one, they introduced themselves, and all of the negative ones, the ones that wanted to kill me, sources of my negative thoughts, inner thoughts, they presented various kind of suicidal dramas to me, which I had to work through with them. Anyway, this process carried on, and it was all very positive. I mean, the negative thought forms that I had, they were pretty dangerous, bringing them to life, meant that I went through various kind of mental health symptoms, such as I thought I was developing DID because they kept taking me over and making me progress through some kind of suicidal ideation. But we got through that. And at the end of that soul retrieval journey, which lasted around about 3 weeks, all of my inner self thought forms chose to reintegrate with self, to come on board, to be part and parcel of my self concept, and I felt great. Except right at the end, we did this ritual. Which was kind of like a mock death. Each of the thought forms went through this mock death, and the idea was that they would stop being thought forms, separate thought forms, and they would be part of self. But the last one to go through the ritual before they completed it, they said, "Oh, and by the way, all of our negative aspects. Well, we made pacts with demons." And yeah, although you've dealt with us and sorted us out, you've still got those demons to deal with. And that was the beginning of my paranoid schizophrenia, because those demons wanted to kill me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see them as part of myself. I saw them as some kind of weird external aspect. And so for the next 10 years, I was fighting against these demons, basically trying to get rid of them, as you would, trying somehow to get them out, you know, to kick them out and protect myself. So I went through all manner of, you know, I got into spirituality and various tools and techniques for trying to get rid of demons. I tried and nothing worked, absolutely nothing worked. And it got to the point where I was having these regular psychosis events where the demons would try to isolate me. They would try to get me out in the countryside, get me lost. And then they would try and kill me. They would convince me that I was being hounded by hordes of physical entities that were demonically controlled. So just about everybody who I met, I believed were demonically controlled and were potentially about to kill me. So quite a scary time. That kind of pushed me to do more and more spiritual work, more and more self-introspection, trying to understand or trying to work out how I could alleviate myself of these demonic specters that were, you know, I could see yeah. them, I could hear them, and they could control me. You know, a lot of the dramas that they presented to me were about them trying to take control of me. Which they always failed at, actually. But yeah, I had many times when I'd be out in the countryside, and yes, they'd be making me walk funny, and they'd be making me act strangely, and at the end of those, I'd usually end up self-admitting into hospital, and trying to go down the medication route. And that's what happened about 8 years ago. I went into the medication route. And the medication, it kind of worked. As I saw it, it kind of diminished the power of the demons and got me to a point where I could somehow erect a wall between the demon connection and self. And so I was. I no longer had those demonic characters coming at me, but I kind of had some negative side effects from the medication in terms of, you know, I lost all condition. I couldn't walk very far, And also I was incredibly depressed. I got so depressed, and what replaced the demonic voices was just depressive suicidal thoughts, which seemed to happen every night. I'd go to bed, and for half an hour before I fell asleep, I'd be having these thoughts of, oh, I should kill myself, oh, I want to die, and I'm worthless, and I should die, and all that kind of thing. But anyway, so that takes us to, so that continued for 7 years up until last June. And then last June, I started noticing that I was getting psychotic feelings. They weren't negative, they were entirely positive, but I noticed they were happening. So I started feeling a massive amount of love for everything. And also my motivation dramatically increased. Took me back to where I used to be. And I came to the conclusion that the meds were wearing off and that the chances are the demons were around the corner. And so I had a decision to make, and that was, and that decision was, do I up the meds, have another 7 years of depression, or do I face them again and see if I can work it out with them? And in that time, kind of my mindset had changed a bit, in terms of I was coming round to the idea that these were just aspects of self, no different to the other aspects of self that I'd already successfully worked with and reintegrated. And I started to see the concept that we're all connected, and that everything is self, that the whole of the universe is self, everything is self. And so I kind of went back to the demons. That was my decision. I remember posting on the mental health forum about it at the time, because I was pretty concerned about it. I tried to get help. I tried to get. I tried to find a shaman, but the shamans wouldn't touch me because I was schizophrenic, and you know how it is. They don't want to get involved in anything where it could end up being a negative outcome. So I ended up going back into self and doing that on my own. And lo and behold, the demons said, oh, no, we've got no problems. We're all friends now. And, yeah, you've worked it out. Were you? Yeah. And yeah, we can reintegrate as well. And that's what we did. Took a while. In September last year, I completed full reintegration of all aspects of self. It's a process called self-actualization. So basically, when you get yourself to a position where you've accepted all aspects of self, even the really nasty negative ones, and you accept that these are all just parts of your own character, that's when you get to a point of what's called full self-actualization, where all aspects of self are in alignment and in agreement. And rather than having negative thoughts, negative feelings, you just have positive thoughts, because every aspect of self wants the best for you, even the demons. And and that's where I am now. I've been in that state since, like I say, pretty much last September. And in that time, I've had one event where I've had a negative thought about self, a self-critical thought, and that was because I was working too hard. I got way too tired, and I started blaming myself for making mistakes on the computer. And that was my only negative thought in those times, in that time. So that's where I am now. I kind of see schizophrenia not as an illness, but as a unique way that some of us get to experience our internal world. A large number of us don't recognize that these are internal aspects. But that's just really about where we are with regards to beliefs. You know, society conditions us into having certain beliefs, and anything schizophrenic is obviously regarded as being mad and insane. Whereas in reality, in my reality, my schizophrenia was in effect my own unique way of interacting with myself, with my thoughts.
So your theory, which you've put into practice, that has been successful for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It has. I've met online a couple of others who've basically done the same thing, who've decided that these thoughts that, you know, a lot of them are very strange, as I'm sure you know. Some people believe they're being contacted by police officers or by, you know, actual other people. And that separation is kind of like a self-denial. Hmm. And it's that self-denial that causes the psychosis. That's what I've discovered, in terms of the minute I move to a self-acceptance mode, then the psychosis event stopped happening. Though I've got the energy, I've still got that level of energy that happens with psychosis. I'm sure you're aware. You with psychosis, you do get this energy increase that happens, and then you start realizing you're gonna go into psychosis, and with me now, I have the energy, but I have no psychosis. I've gone looking for psychosis because I'm a big believer in testing myself.
Yeah.
And so I've gone last October through till around about February, I spent a lot of time actually trying to trigger psychosis. Because I felt I was on the verge of it, I had all of this energy and all of those feelings that are precursor feelings towards psychosis. I had all of that, and part of me likes psychosis. I'm not trying to say that my schizophrenia journey has been an entirely bad thing. It hasn't been. I found it amazingly interesting. Terribly depressing at times. I'm a messiah. My particular set of dramas involved me being Jesus. Mm-hmm. You'll be happy to know that I'm beyond that now. I realize I am my own unique self, and Jesus was just part of my journey into self, as I understand it.
Wonder, you know, with schizophrenia, a lot of folk, you know, myself included, have that belief that Jesus is part of us. Maybe, you know, when you're going through psychosis, the spirit of Jesus is there to help you. Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing.
Well, with me, I ended up under having this quite detailed structure of self, and so there's the self that is of your current life, and that was my thought forms, my inner aspects of self, the 42 aspects of self that I created as part of my journey through this life. So that's one part. Then you get past lives, so you have all these other selves that are people who you used to be, past lives, and technically, Jesus is one of my past lives, but also you also have higher aspects. So the idea there that in terms of the creation of self, there is first of all the God thought, the Godhead speaks the God thought of self. And that God thought of self enters into existence purely as a thought form. and is a highly complex thought form which disentangles itself and splits into several archetypal aspects. Yeah. And one of those archetypal aspects of self for me was Jesus. And it could be for you as well, I believe.
Jesus is, you know, in terms of personality, he's ultimate understanding, isn't he? Understanding with love, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus is the love messiah, basically, isn't he? He's just totally love mad. I mean, but just to give you an idea, you know, I mentioned these archetypes. So I had five archetypes. So Jesus is one, and Jesus is effectively the archetype that is me. So the Jesus archetype went on to create an oversoul, and the oversoul created all of the incarnations, and I'm one of those incarnations. But that isn't to say that I think I'm Jesus. I just think I'm one of Jesus' children, if you know what I mean. Because I'm unique. I'm not him. And, you know, there's no part of me that thinks Jesus' thoughts, if you know what I mean. I do have conversations with Jesus in my head. But I'm not trying to be like him, and I'm not trying to, you know, and that's not the way. It's not what it's about. But I also have other archetypes, and they're all from the Christian pantheon as well. In terms of, I've got Lucifer, and Lucifer was the guy who was giving me all the demons. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I got to the point of recognizing that Lucifer is one of my archetypes, and as such needed to be integrated into self in order for me to be all of self, to rise above those, if you're with me. So I integrated Lucifer. Interestingly, in my pantheon, I've got a couple of Christian gods, because I've got Jehovah, and I've got a separate one called Yahweh. And Yahweh was my godhead, and he's also the god that judged me. The one god of all is Jehovah, which is quite interesting in terms of the Christian belief system and my own belief system do stray quite far away from each other. So I'm not a Bible reader. I just have my own understanding of self, and that's good enough for me.
In terms of in terms of society, how do you reflect on society compared to your Christian beliefs? Is there a place for your personality in the society? How do you feel about that?
Well, I kind of think of, I think we're all different. I think we all have a different path. We're all unique. In fact, it's our uniqueness which is our importance. It's what makes us all special. Each and every one of us is highly special, and it's based on that uniqueness. So my beliefs are personal beliefs. They're not beliefs that I would want to try to make anybody else believe. What I'd encourage other people to believe is to believe in themselves and to believe in their own personal journey. So I'm kind of at odds with society on that one, because society seems to want to make us all believe the same thing. But I believe that comes from a place of insecurity. You know, if I'm insecure in my beliefs, then I'll want to surround myself with people who believe the same thing. Do you get what I'm saying there?
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm entirely secure in my beliefs, I won't even need to tell anybody about them, because they're part and parcel of who I am, and that's all that's important. It doesn't matter what anybody else believes, and I'd not particularly want to say to go around preaching my beliefs, because that indicates that I want to make people believe what I believe, and I don't want that. I want them to believe what they believe. What I want them to find their true self, and I want to want them to find their own life journey.
So, George, your journey started with a severe triggering event at 42. You know, I think when I look back at my journey, I had a trigger event or events. But what do you feel about the predisposition for schizophrenia? Do you think that you were holding yourself in check for your prior life, middle age? What do you think about that?
Well, I've got some background stuff in terms of I now remember waking up to my voices when I was about 12. Mm-hmm. I and what happened was I discovered meditation when I was about 12, and I was listening to this particular track, lying on the floor, and meditating, and up popped the voices. And the voices at that age had this, we had a bit of a conference, and it was a life planning conference. And basically, my voices said, well, look, you know, you can wake up now, but it's going to be crap for you, because the world isn't ready to hear you. On top of that, you're going to end up miserable if you wake up now. So the decision was that I wouldn't wake up. In fact, what I'd do is I'd put myself into an even deeper sleep and become a sleeping person, which is what I became. So wiped my memory of that particular event. So I didn't remember that until I was about 49. Was when I remembered that event, so what it meant was that I got to lead a pretty much normal life, which of course is a life of someone who's no idea of who their self is someone who's copying other people and doing all of that normal stuff.
Do you think other people do that?
I think each of us has a deeper aspect of self that most people aren't aware of. And if they were aware of, if the majority were aware of, then this would be a very, very different society.
You know, so what the question I asked about society, do you think there's issues with society? How do you feel about society as a whole? Say Western society, the British society even. What are your feelings on it?
Right. Well, basically, our society is a bunch of sleepers, people who are asleep to themselves. And that means that they have very low self-esteem, very low self-confidence. And what they do is they use rationality in order to prove to themselves that they should have self-esteem and should have self-confidence. Mm-hmm. So they go out and do things. They do things that prove to themselves that they can't feel bad about themselves because they've just bought this wonderful car. Mm-hmm. Or they can't feel bad about themselves because they've just bought this wonderful bit of IT, and that's really improved their concept of self and self-esteem. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, is all false. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, a lot of illnesses that we get are all about needing to treat ourselves or needing to feel that ourselves are special, and so proving different aspects of our specialness. But it's all kind of false, because it's not based on a core true self.
But does it matter if they love their family, they love their children? Does it really matter, or do you think it does matter?
Well, that's an interesting idea. I mean, I pretended that I loved people, but the reality is that you can't love anybody unless you love yourself. And if you've got no self-esteem, you don't love yourself. Mm-hmm. So to my mind, the majority of people who say they love people are saying it because they want to feel normal. Mm-hmm. And they're lying to themselves. They're saying, I'm going to show my love for you by doing X or by doing Y, and that's going to prove how much I love you, and that'll prove that to myself as well, because I've just gone out and spent that money on that person, or mm-hmm. spent that time or effort on that person. Therefore, obviously, I must love that person. So that's great. I'm a great person because I love people. Mm-hmm. But actually, they don't love themselves. They don't know who themselves are. Yeah. They lost themselves when they were a child.
So there was a Native American quote which says that Western civilization has been cut off from spirit. Do you feel a connection with that? The idea that in a way that's what you're talking about, that we've cut ourselves off from spirit. Which essentially yeah. means we've cut ourselves off from our higher self.
Yeah, we have a system that cuts everybody off from spirit, and it's called school, basically. When I was talking about self-rejections, and you know, if you've not got all of self on board, then you're going to feel worthless. You're going to feel empty. Well, that whole driving mechanism, I'm not going to blame it 100% on school, because a big part of it is your parents and your upbringing, but basically it's the way that we teach our children. We teach our children to reject themselves and to modify themselves instead of being themselves. So instead of us bringing a new person into this world via birth, and then working with that person to find out what sort of person they are and what their true self is, we don't do that. We tell that person what they should be. Mm-hmm. And that concept of what they should be is drummed into us and forced into us through whatever mechanisms. But those mechanisms basically are trauma. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, when you have a trauma, you end up rejecting the negative feelings. So you try to disconnect yourself from those negative feelings that are brought up by the trauma, which is a rejection of self. And so ultimately, over time, a child will reject various aspects of themselves until they find themselves at the age of, let's say, 15, where they recognize that they're unhappy, they don't feel fulfilled, they don't feel
George, I think what I mean your ideas, you know, or I don't think we've discussed such a thing in this podcast at all, you know, and I think there is credibility to what you're saying. But what makes me think is that the concept of consciousness and spirit is something which we do gloss over in society, and it is such a rich area to discuss and explore, and ultimately, it's in a way, it's kind of what we should be doing, exploring our inner selves, our deeper selves, and not being afraid of that, because ultimately, you know, that is our essence. The spiritual being is our essence. So, yeah, you know, I can relate to what you're saying. You know, in terms of your schizophrenia. Now, are you stable? Do you see a consultant, or what is your current situation?
It's ever so interesting in terms of what's happening on my schizophrenia front, because I declared myself cured back in February. I'd tried every which way to bring on board any symptoms that I might have. And nada, no negative symptoms whatsoever, you know. So, you know, trying to, you know, I did some naughty things with psychedelics over the Christmas period, and just trying to find my negative things, because to me, you get to a point where you realize that all of your negativity are big opportunities. If you've got a negative thought, that means you've got an aspect of self that's in shadow that needs to be brought to life. So it's an opportunity for self-growth and a negative thought. So I did a load of work trying to find any residual negative thoughts in me, any residual negative aspects. And on the one hand, I drew a blank. You know, I took a load of mushrooms and, I had the least symptoms. I took more mushrooms than I've ever taken in my life. And yet I had virtually nothing. The only bit of learning that I got from that was that I was no longer to think of anything I did as a mistake, as that everything I do is correct and positive and good. And so come February, back in February, I had this event where I went within, and I ended up, I was busy stepping up the levels. There's lots of levels in terms of, I'd crossed over into Source back in September. It's part of the self-actualization journey. Once you have all aspects of self on board, you are no longer living in lies. And when you no longer live in lies, then you can be accepted into Source. And I got accepted into Source. I was judged and found good, and accepted into Source, crossed the rainbow bridge, met all of the light beings, had quite a bit of a time with the light beings, but then started moving up the levels. And so the light beings coalesce into the White Queen and the Black King, or the White King and the White Queen, depends on there's different aspects, but basically it moves into that dual aspect. And eventually I got to a point where I was at a level called Void, which is the precursor God stage, if you like, the precursor for creation, which is this Void stage of God, which is kind of like a precursor. And as a part of getting there, I had to do this thing, which was a dance with the devil. And it was and the dance with the devil was, the devil wanted me to tell him my deepest, darkest secret, and the devil would tell me his deepest, darkest secret. And part of that was, the devil said, well, actually, you don't know your deepest, darkest secret because you can't remember it. Let me give it back to you. So he gave me back the memory, and the memory was when I was abused when I was 6 months old. And this made absolute sense, because I've got loads of memories of me after 6 months being a very sad child. I also got back memories that I hadn't had before of pre-6 months, of happy me. And then I had the memory of the actual abuse event take place. Devil took total responsibility for it, said, sorry, George, it was me. I forced that person to do that thing. They didn't even know they were doing it. It just happened, as far as they were concerned. But this had been a big part of your disconnection with self journey. And the reality is that we all have to disconnect with self. So you can't just blame society for your disconnections. Society helps with the disconnection process, but the reality is that there is a deep spiritual meaning behind the disconnection, and it is our each and every one of us have to go through this journey where we disconnect from self, we lose self, we become depressed, sad, you name it, develop psychological illnesses, develop all kinds of personality traits. But eventually the idea is that we reconnect with self, that we end up closing the loop and going back to the beginning, if you like. Yeah. And that's what I did in that particular event. So I realized that I'd now gone through my entire life's worth of trauma. I'd processed the whole lot from the very first trauma through to the very, very last trauma. The path of self was now clear to me, and I understood myself entirely. And given that I just was no longer getting any negative thoughts and feelings, any negative attacks, or, you know, and certainly no psychosis, no significant visions or hallucinations or anything like that.
But you have what some folk would consider unusual beliefs.
I do. I do. But they're all my beliefs. So I'm not trying. I'm not asking you to believe me. That doesn't matter to me. I have my own concepts because that's what I discovered within, and I believe my withinness. I believe it. So just coming back to that. So in January, I decided that I must be cured. So in February, I had a word with my doctor, and I said, well, I don't think I need these meds anymore. In fact, I don't think these meds are doing anything to me whatsoever. So on the one hand, I don't care if I continue having them, because they're not having any impact on me whatsoever. And you know, all of the negative side effects have gone. All of the side effects have gone. I feel normal. I feel better than normal now. I feel more normal than I've ever been in my life. Yeah. And so I got in touch with my psychiatrist, and we had a meeting, and we agreed to do tapering. And they've got it wrong. They explained to me that tapering was going to take a year, and they were going to do hyperbolic tapering. And yes, they give me all this complexity about how that was going to happen, how it was going to be 25% initially, then after 3 months another 25%, then after 3 months another 25%, then after 3 months then we'd go hyperbolic tapering and go to micro tapering for the last 25%. Well, they've got the dosages wrong. And so the tapering started 3 weeks ago, and we went down 25%, but my latest prescription takes me down by 75%. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy with that. So I'm now on a 25% dosage after 3 weeks of tapering, which is great. I'm not feeling any different whatsoever.
You just got to watch out for the withdrawal symptoms.
I'm expecting the withdrawals to happen. I mean, I was thinking I'd probably get some now when they did that big step change to take me from, because I was on 8 milligrams of risperidone, and I'm now on 2 milligrams of risperidone, and I was expecting something, but I'm not seeing anything in terms of symptoms. Yeah. There is potential for sleep. I have had sleep problems, but I think that's more to do with my other medication that I've taken, that I've gone cold turkey on, which is weed. For the last 20 years, I've had weed every single day of my life. Mm-hmm. And then in the conversation with the doctors, they said, well, you know, you're coming off this medication. What about that other medication that you're having? What about weed? Don't you think you should come off that? And I agreed with them. I said, well, to be honest, it's just weed is just a habit now. Mm-hmm. I barely get stoned anymore. So I decided that in advance of coming off the meds, I'd go cold turkey on the weed. And that had quite a big impact on my sleeping. No other psychological impacts that I can make out. In fact, I'm feeling more normal than I've ever, like I say, than I've ever felt in my life.
Well, George, I think we better wrap it up here. But I'm thankful for your insight in your clarity. You know, I think it's quite an interesting perspective. And I think it's a valuable part of the ecosystem of what is going on behind the scenes of everyday folk and of schizophrenia. You know, I think it's an interesting idea. So thank you for that. George, I want to ask you, is there a particular genre of music which you like, so I can add it on to this episode?
Well, what I'm into at the moment is there's a bunch of YouTube videos called Deep House 2023.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've been listening to them non-stop for the last month. And I don't know if you can find one, but my favorite absolute track is in those compilations is a track called Supergirl.
Okay, so what
so
what
if you
I'll
can
do
find that, no problem. If you can't find it, and you can pick any of those, you know, I like all of the tracks on those.
So what I'll do is, due to copyright issues, I can only play certain musics, but I will find something in that genre. So that's fine. So yeah, I just want to say thank you again, George. You know, it's a pleasure talking to you. As always, it's a privilege. Because I feel there's always, including yourself, there's always a genuine and honest feeling which I thoroughly appreciate, and I hope my listeners appreciate that as well. So thank you very much, George.
Yeah, thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you.